Good day. My dear young men and women, I am here to just share a few minutes of your time and letting you in on a few facts about alcohol and why people drink it. I would simply like to tell you what it is and what it does. Don't be frightened by the collar. I am not here to moralize, not here to preach, just teach. A few of the ABCs about one of the things that occupies the minds, the concern of the whole country, alcohol and its use. Why do people drink it? Well, why do people drink anything that they drink? We drink water and milk, like most animals, because we have to. It's essential to health. We drink sweet-tasting things, like soft drink, hot chocolate, and so on, simply because they taste good. We come to such a thing as coffee and find out that we had to learn to drink it, and the first reason we used to drink it was to satisfy our curiosity, because it isn't given to us early in life. We drink it because it's customary to drink it. And we drink it because there's a certain social aspect to drinking it. There are such things as coffee breaks. Now we come to alcohol. It really isn't necessary. And in most forms that it comes in, it doesn't taste good, but we drink it anyway. And it too is drunk out of curiosity. We want to find out what this magic stuff is. It is customary to drink alcohol at table in many, many homes throughout the world. It does produce conviviality. We don't only have coffee breaks. We have cocktail parties. We have parties. We celebrate graduations and anniversaries, a whole lot of things. It does produce conviviality, fellowship, and all that. It is drunk by some to escape the harshness of anything, any ache or pain or anxiety of life. It is drunk to alleviate pain. You ever heard the expression, boy, you were feeling no pain last night? It is a painkiller. But primarily, people drink it for a thing called euphoria. Now, that is a kind of a 10-cent word that simply means a sense of well-being. It makes you feel good. It kind of puts you at ease up here, and in here it produces that wonderful physical feeling of a tingle in your fingertips and so on. What is this magic stuff that when drunk makes you feel good? It's a solvent. Every good cleaner usually has alcohol in it. It's an irritant. If you cut yourself and spill a little alcohol in the cut, it'll burn. In fact, after you shave and you put aftershave lotion on, it stings. It's the alcohol in it that stings. It's been called a stimulant, simply because people do wacky things when they drink it, but we'll see that it isn't. It's an antiseptic. Alcohol is used to purify your arm before a nurse puts a needle in it. For centuries, it was an anesthetic. But primarily and basically, in its drinkable form, there are a whole lot of forms of alcohol, but in its drinkable form, alcohol is a sedative drug. Chemically, it's a sedative drug composed of carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen. The chemical formula is C2H5OH. Now, I just made a statement, alcohol is a sedative drug. How do we know that? By comparing it with an accepted anesthetic drug. You're learning in school that comparison is a great, great figure of speech. If you have something inside of you and you want to communicate it to me because I don't know it, compare it with something I do know. And we know that alcohol is a sedative drug by comparing its action with the action of ether. What does ether do? It interferes with the oxygen supply to the brain, and it puts it to sleep. It anesthetizes people. Now, let's take an adult and anesthetize him, drug him with ether, and then do the same thing with alcohol, and we'll see what happens. The human brain is composed of various parts that control different bodily functions and mental functions. The outermost part of the brain is the seat of intellect or judgment, reasoning. Beneath that, the emotions, the imagination, and the memory, a little bit more protected. Deeper still is what controls the movements of your body, the motor activity, your sense of coordination, the movement of arms and legs and mouth and eyelids and so on. The semi-voluntary or semi-automatic functions, the blinking of your eyes. At times you control it, at times you don't. There are purely involuntary actions. Your stomach, your intestines, all of this internal work the body does, you have no control. They're fully automatic. They're involuntary. Then the most protected part of the brain is where we find that part which controls the vital functions, your heartbeat and your breathing. Now, what do you mean by a normal adult? Somebody who functions according to this formula. Intellect predominating over emotions. We are called rational animals. Intellect does not control emotions, but very often when you feel like doing something, reason makes you do the rational, sensible thing. Watch what happens to that formula. When the brain that controls it gets drugged. Now, if you've ever had surgery and they used ether as an anesthetic, you noticed after two or three inhalations a kind of a dryness in the throat, almost a feeling of suffocation, and you want to rip the mask off and just gulp fresh air. But before you can, you begin to go. You begin to feel wonderful. If a nurse said, hey, look, we're going to have to take your whole arm off. That wart is dangerous. You say, take them both. I got legs. Why do you feel good in a situation that normally would make you feel bad? Because ether begins to sedate the brain like the dimming of the house lights in a theater. The first part that goes is reason. The worry wart is put to sleep. And you feel good because ether just knocked out of the box what would make you feel bad. So it's I over E except after D. Add a drug, knock out reason, liberate the emotions, and you have a reversal of that formula. With the emotions predominating, you enter an excitement stage. That's why you're wrapped tightly. That's why they're standing close to you. That's why they shoot you through it simply because it could be dangerous. There may or may not be nausea. There's a nurse there with a basin to catch anything you might have to offer, but normally you're empty enough so that there's nothing there to offer. The motor activity is the next part that's hit. You have intellect going first. The emotions are drugged. They come out in a drugged state. Your sense of coordination is affected. If they took you off that table, you'd stagger and fall. Now, when the brain is sedated down to the semi-automatic functions, you enter a state of unconsciousness. That's called pre-anesthesia. What's that mean? You're out, but you can't be cut yet without experiencing pain. When the brain gets sedated down to here, when the involuntary functions are deadened because that part of the brain is asleep, you're anesthetized. Watch this, please. The next part that goes, your vital functions. When they go, you do. A state of anesthesia is that which just precedes death. It's a very dangerous thing, and for that reason, there's no such thing as minor surgery if you undergo general anesthesia. Coming out of it, you go through the same process in reverse. You go from anesthesia to pre-anesthesia, an excitement stage. That's why you go to a recovery room. Back into your room, there'll be no euphoria. You've just been operated on. So they knock you out again so you don't feel the pain here. And then they begin to taper you off of the painkiller as you begin to recover and the pain begins to recede. All right. That's what ether does. Let's substitute alcohol for ether and watch what it does. Ladies and gentlemen, as such, this has nothing to do with alcoholism. This has to do with anybody who ingests alcohol. It will have the same effect on the brain. It will reverse this formula, put you to sleep in here, and have its effect out here. Let's watch. Take two or three drinks. The first sensation is a burning in the throat, simply because it dries out those mucous membranes. And being an irritant, it hurts. What happens when you put aftershave lotion on your cheek? If it burns your cheek, what do you think it does to these very, very sensitive mucous membranes in your throat? That's why people drink a chaser after straight whiskey, or that's why many, many people don't drink it straight. They dilute it to avoid that. Alcohol is handled by the liver at approximately the rate of 1 ounce an hour. 1 ounce is to be found in 2 ounces of 100 proof whiskey. Supposing you drink more than that within an hour, what happens to that which is not broken up by the liver? It gets into the bloodstream and goes around until the liver can handle it. When the blood brings it to the brain, it begins to sedate the brain. How do we know that? Observation. Don't you know when you're in the presence of someone who is drinking? What goes first? Reason. You know why people feel good when they drink alcohol? Alcohol, like ether, hits the first part of the brain that's vulnerable and affects it. You feel good because alcohol knocks out of the way what would make you feel bad. So it's I over E, except after A. Add alcohol, knock out reason, liberate the emotions, and they come out. But they come out drug affected. That's why we see the goofy behavior. That's why you go into an excitement stage. And this is why people believe alcohol is a stimulant, because of what we see it do to us in the very process of putting us to sleep. So in one sense, it's a stimulus. But in a realer sense, a much more real sense, it's a sedative. It is sedating the brain and causing you to have an excitement stage. You may or may not get sick. It has nothing to do with it. This is affected first. Your judgment. Your judgment. That's why there's no such thing as a sane driver who has had a couple of drinks. His judgment is impaired even if only that much. And his physical coordination is impaired, if only that much. But we'll talk about that at a later stage. The mind, the emotions, the next part is the motor activity. You see it in the slowness of the blinking of the eyelids, the thickness of tongue, the weave of the hand getting the key into the ignition. And if somebody's very drunk, he staggers. His brain has been affected to the degree that the part that controls his sense of coordination is asleep enough that the sense coordination is beginning to go. If you drink enough, you will pass out. That means this is gone. Why is alcohol a painkiller? For exactly the same reason that ether is a painkiller. When the semi-automatic functions are gone, you can take pain like you wouldn't know. Many, an alcoholic, wakes up in the morning with his arm in a cast and wonders how it got that way. Fell and broke his arm, spent the night in an emergency room, probably blacked out and doesn't even remember. If you drink enough, you can anesthetize yourself. And if you drink more than that, you could, theoretically anyway, OD on alcohol. You could literally drink yourself to death by sedation. However, nature usually abhors excess, and you would probably throw it up. But I can remember a case that happened many, many years ago in Baltimore. 13-year-old girl, on a dare, on a bet, drank an entire pint of whiskey, and it stayed down. And she was sedated. Her brain was sedated somewhere between here and here. Had they not pumped her stomach, she'd have died. She had a very, very faint heartbeat. But they were able to pump her stomach out before the alcohol could sedate her to death. Coming out of it, you go through the same process in reverse. Now, to wind this up, alcohol is a chemical. It is composed of carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen, a carbohydrate. It does many, many things. It can act as a solvent, an irritant. It seems to act like a stimulant. It's an anesthetic. Remember the man who found in the scripture, the man who came upon the fellow who got beaten up and robbed and stabbed? He treated his wounds with wine and oil. The wine is an antiseptic and the oil to soothe. Basically, it is a sedative drug that acts upon the brain in such a way that it sedates or puts it to sleep. Now, alcoholism is a disease that implies addiction to this sedative drug. Two characteristics. Once you've got it till death, and it gets worse. Whether you drink or not, it gets worse till death. Why are we going over all of this with you? What you do in your later life is your business. The choices are yours. I can't and don't want to dictate your use of alcohol. Your parents can't. Schools, God can't. You have freedom of choice. Choice is up to you. I would suggest that since alcohol is so highly addictive and so terribly dangerous, that you think seriously about abstaining from it. And that's all I have to say right now. In the next segment, I will talk to you about your choices. But for now, thank you for doing the kindness of listening to me. And that's the way it is. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.